There are so many issues throughout all levels of government that smart Christians need to view it as a way to care for our neighbor by making good decisions.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation with her husband, Mark, at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The federal government has gotten much more involved in family formation or family destruction, abortion, other issues. And there are so many ways in which it's important for us to think about how we can defend the weak and vulnerable among us by making good decisions.
You can watch journalists Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christian political engagement at this year's Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. The $135 registration fee includes the ability to watch a live stream and a recording. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. We are still trying to sort this out, a decision that came as a surprise to many when the Supreme Court was asked to consider whether or not the 1964 Civil Rights Act, in particular the word sex in that act that prohibited discrimination on the basis of sex, really meant, well, both male and female, what we ordinarily think about as sex, but really meant a lot of other things, or maybe really now today means a lot of other things. They said that word does mean really anything you want it to mean. Obviously, a terrible decision, but what was the reasoning behind this decision? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court's reasoning regarding the word sex in the Civil Rights Act. Dr. Robert Gagnon joins us. He's professor of theology at Houston Baptist University, an author of the book, The Bible and Homosexual Practice, Texts and Hermeneutics, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Supreme Court Ridiculously Demands Everyone Pretend Sex Differences Don't Exist. Dr. Gagnon, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Were you surprised by the Supreme Court's recent decision regarding the Civil Rights Act and LGBTQ discrimination?
I was stunned by it. I didn't think that Gorsuch would rule in the way that he did, that he would join the side. Roberts was always questionable, but I thought he would at least be sane on the question of an issue like this, which is so steeped in the question of religious liberties, which generally he's been good on. He didn't vote for Obergefell, for example. So I was fairly hopeful about this. It was really stunning that it happened as it did. And I think it's actually a worse decision. It will have a wider sweeping effect on the churches, on the secular realm, than even Obergefell gay marriage decision had. It's really devastating.
The majority opinion reads in part, quote, an employer who fires an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires that person for traits or actions it would not have questioned in members of a different sex. Sex plays a necessary and undisguisable role in the decision, exactly what Title VII forbids. You say that this argument is absurd. Why?
Well, I call it a swap rule, but it says essentially that whatever is true for one sex has to be true for the other sex. Now, we understand biological sex to be a benign and neutral condition of life, but we don't understand that all actions undertaken by any member of one sex have to be accepted and embraced for the other sex, because that leads to absurd results. And a classic example, of, I tried to list several in the article, but really it's unlimited. You can do a thought experiment and say to yourself, what happens if we apply this swap rule consistently? Well, take, for example, an obvious case, professional women's sports. If you don't allow a man who is equal or likely, in many cases, better than a woman in a given sport, if he's not accepted on that team, the only reason why he's not being accepted on that team is because he's a man. If you swap for a woman, if you were a woman with the same skill, then he would be accepted. So under the reasoning used by Gorsuch and company in the majority decision, they would have to accept this man in professional women's sports. No ifs, ands, and buts about it. Now, the only question is whether Gorsuch and the others who ruled with him understand the implications of the logic of their position. They could choose to be illogical here. They could choose to be inconsistent. But if they were to be consistent, they would have to accept a man on a women's professional team. And it's not even limited to that. I mean, the reasoning is so ridiculous that a man to participate in all women's activities would not even have to declare himself to be transgender. He could simply, as a man, insist that he will do it. For a man to enter any women's space, whether that be a restroom, locker room, female prisons, shelters, you name it. If it can be determined that he would be allowed in this venue if he were a woman, and the only reason that he's not being allowed in the venue is because he's a man, then according to the reasoning of Gorsuch and others, that would violate Title VII non-discrimination practices based on sex. So it's just ludicrous. Any man could go into a woman's restroom, really? Or let's say, for example, another example that I give, and again, the examples are unlimited. This is just thought experiments here. If the company has its own company pool, and men, as usual, are allowed to be in their bathing suits without a top, if they were to discipline a female executive who entered the pool without a top on, that would be a violation of sex discrimination, according to the reasoning of the court. In other words, the fact that she has female breasts, and that creates a certain reaction on the part of men, that cannot be factored into the equation. So in the sense, it treats women and men as completely the same with all respects, with no differentiation for privacy rules or anything else. Nobody can actually buy that kind of reasoning.
Do you think that, I'm not going to talk about the majority because I think there are people who did think it through and do want those outcomes, but do you think in particular Justice Roberts and Gorsuch thought these things through to their logical conclusions?
No, I don't. But that's, to me, that's stunning to say because they're not dumb people, obviously, to get to the point where they're at. They're very bright people, but very bright people, as you well know, when they're governed, because you've had to deal with issues in churches on these kinds of questions, very bright people, when they're governed by strong ideological considerations, don't think analogically. They can't make appropriate analogies and comparisons. I mean, Gorsuch, in writing for the majority, even said, well, we haven't really decided what to do with women's restrooms and sports and locker rooms and things like that. That will be other cases that will come up. Again, either he is analogically challenged because of the deep left-wing sexual ideology that he's operating with. And by the way, I said back in March 2017 when he was coming up for consideration, I stated repeatedly Republican senators should not vote for him because he is by no means solid on the LGBTQ question. In fact, seems to me the opposite. But if he thought for a moment those questions about invading women's spaces would already be decided by the logic that he used in the Bostock decision. It's a swap rule. If you would accept a woman for doing X, but because he's a man, you're not accepting him, then you can't do that because that's sex discrimination. So by definition of his logic, he would have to allow every man who wants to be in a woman's restroom, locker room, shelter, sports, whatever, he would have to, with that logic, say he has to be allowed, otherwise he violates Title VII's prohibition of discrimination on the basis of sex. That's his reasoning. There is no alternative decision he'd have to come to. So the best that we can hope for is either A, he doesn't remember his reasoning for Bostock, or B, he decides to be inconsistent about it. That's the best that we can hope for. If he wants to be logically consistent and have a good memory, there is no other outcome possible. And it's not going to just affect issues of employment. Because this establishes gender identity and sexual orientation as federally protected civil rights categories, This will affect every area of life without exception.
Dr. Robert Gagnon is our guest. We're talking with him about the U.S. Supreme Court's reasoning regarding the word sex in the Civil Rights Act of 1964. How does this ruling obliterate common sense distinctions between the sexes? We'll answer that next. You can watch and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Matt Walsh, Brian Wolfmiller, and Hans Feeney at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. All paid registrants will have the ability to watch the conference live and on demand. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or give us a call 618-223-8385.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Ad Crucem is home to numerous artists dedicated to producing high-quality Christian products. From Adriel Hass's paintings of biblical narratives, to Kelly Klage's Lutheran-themed jewelry, to Scapegoat Studios' liturgical banners, we strive to embody St. Paul's statement, "I decided to know nothing except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." Whether you're a part-time hobbyist or a full-time creator, AdCruesome is interested in supporting your Christ-focused products. Please contact info@adcruesome.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our romp through Romans. Unfair? The potter in the clay, submitting to God's righteousness. Message of salvation for all, and faith comes from hearing. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Robert Gagnon is our guest, author of the book, The Bible and Homosexual Practice, Texts and Hermeneutics. We're talking about the Supreme Court's reasoning regarding the word sex in the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Dr. Gagnon, how is it that this ruling, in effect, obliterates distinctions between the sexes themselves?
Because by operating on the swap principle, it's essentially saying that whatever is afforded women has to be afforded men. Whatever is afforded men has to be afforded women, irrespective of biologically based sex differences. And again, as I wanted to stress in this article, because I haven't seen anyone else pick it up, it does, for a man to enter a woman's venue does not require him to even identify as a woman, although we all know that that's fake. And that any surgical procedures that may or may not be performed in a man are only going to be cosmetic. It's not going to change his XY chromosomes. It's not going to change all the biological features that entail being a male. But he doesn't even have to go through that process now based on this reasoning. Given that reasoning, given that swap rule, that it's entirely equal, the way you deal with men has to be entirely the same that you deal way with that you deal with women and vice versa. That means that any man can do whatever he wants that's accessible for previously only accessible for women to do. It also means now that by placing gender identity, transgenderism, that's code for transgenderism, and sexual orientation, which is code for homosexual orientation, it's saying that those are now federally protected civil rights categories. It's run roughshod over Congress. I mean, Congress, the Senate has refused thus far to approve that interpretation of Title VII, sex covering those categories. Now the court has become a legislative branch in the fullest possible way and says, we're going to do it for you because you didn't do it. Now everything from that will follow. Here's a couple of things that could follow. Churches could lose their tax-exempt status because they're regarded as bigoted views if they don't uphold gender identity and sexual orientation, especially protected classes. Now, the state can't intervene in everything, but they can take away tax-exempt status. Think about what they can do to any religious institution, for example, any Christian college or university. If those institutions do not make a point of providing special protections and affirmation and indoctrination sessions regarding transgenderism and homosexual practice, they'll lose whatever federal funds they may be getting. That means student loans. That means research grants for those in the science fields. Ultimately, it will mean an endangerment of their accreditation. And if their accreditation is pulled because they're viewed like a racist Bob Jones University kind of thing, if their accreditation is pulled, then that means students are not going to go to them because their degree won't be accepted as valid by future employers. And that will be effectively the end of Christian education. Children and adults obviously in their employment, children in their schools from the earliest age on, will be forcibly indoctrinated into accepting homosexual practice and transgenderism and punished if they do not. Certain professions, if it's known that you once had membership in a church that didn't promote the LGBTQ line, then what will happen is that you'll be disqualified for that profession or government office. All right? You're a member of what church, Todd?
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Exactly. Because you're a member of that, let's say you'd only been a member of that 20 years ago and left it. If you'd ever been a member of that, you apply for a government position or certain professions like the legal profession or the medical profession, things like that. Because you had that association, you're not going to get in. It'll be used as a job disqualifying factor. Christians will lose their white-collar jobs for posting views on social media against transgenderism or homosexual practice, or for failing to comply with mandatory transgender speech. If you're a parent and you have a child that identifies as transgender or homosexual in an affirming way and you attempt to thwart that, the state will find a way to either compel you to comply with that identity on the part of your child or state social services will take the child away from you. I mean, it's just extraordinary the extent that they can go here, Todd, with this measure.
You say that this ruling makes defining sex entirely subjective. What do you mean by that, Dr. Gagnon?
Well, it means that they've even bypassed the question about any biological difference, whether that's important or not. For example, one example that they give and in the ruling of the court majority is that if you have a transgender man in the workplace and he comes in dressed like a woman, if you would accept that dress from a woman, then you would be committing sex discrimination against him as a man, even if he identifies as a woman. Well, because he identifies, regardless of whether or not he identifies as a woman, so you can't do anything about that. You have to accept that. So they're operating on a premise that there's no difference between male and female, and they don't care whether there's a biological correlation or a subjective correlation. It all comes under sex discrimination if you would allow the same thing in the other sex.
So is that why you say that it also makes defining sex superfluous?
Exactly. Does it? Because there isn't any sexual differentiation that the law has to consider.
So in particular, I think what a lot of people are concerned about is to the point of the actual lawsuits that were being considered by the court, into what position does this ruling put all employers?
Well, all employers will have to kowtow to the LGBTQ agenda. And that's going to include, of course, things like restrooms, locker rooms, etc. It's also going to eventually entail mandatory diversity sessions in the workplace that promote the LGBTQ agenda. And it's going to turn the workplace into a sort of police state. For example, one past employment that I had, we had to go through this diversity mantra thing, it's a national thing that I had to go through. One of the examples was, if you as an employee hear two other employees even if it's on their lunch break, talking negatively about gay marriage. What should you do about that? And the correct answer, quote unquote, correct answer is that you have to report that to human resources, because they're making an unsafe environment for such employees. So it's going to become like an LGBTQ police state in the workplace. And if you, for example, in social media indicate any negativity towards transgenderism, homosexual practice, and that's reported, you're in a white-collar position, that's reported in your workplace, that'll be grounds for penalties or even firing you. So it's not going to be a democratic atmosphere here.
Finally, Dr. Gagnon, you have talked in general or some specifics about what could happen to churches. There are those who are suggesting that the next step the court wants to take, given the opportunity of cases before them, is to put in exemptions for religious organizations. How optimistic are you about that?
Well, there will always be some exemptions. For example, no church will be required to accept somebody who is identified as transgender or is engaging in homosexual practice. I'm not saying that that's going to happen. But anytime the church intersects with the state, that includes the tax-exempt status, that includes the church sometimes undertaking charitable work, from which they get monies from the state to help, and so forth. Or if they're using their church, they allow their church to be used for things that aren't centrally related to their religious concerns, then that church can be opened up for example, if you allow people in your church to get married who aren't members of your denomination, then you'll have to allow a same-sex wedding or a transgender celebration and so forth. So anytime there's any intersection of the church with the state, that's going to result in a penalty on the church. And the real big problem for Christians, not just that, it's the fact that Christians live over 90% of their lives outside the walls of the church, even pastors. So that to that extent, they're going to be affected in every single way. And think, too, about the effect of indoctrination. That's going to be a full court press. Every elementary school in the country, including Drag Queen Story Hour for kindergartners. You can't opt out of it. You can't protest against it because it's a civil right. So you're going to have massive indoctrination. Most of the people who make up even conservative denominations go through the public school systems. And there'll be more of that as Christian institutions of learning lose their accreditation because of their resistance to these civil rights categories. And they're eventually going to grow up and lead those churches, even places like the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church. And eventually they're going to change what happens in that denomination.
Dr. Robert Gagnon is professor of theology at Houston Baptist University. He's author of the book, The Bible and Homosexual Practice, Texts and Hermeneutics, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Supreme Court Ridiculously Demands Everyone Pretend Sex Differences Don't Exist. You'll find a link to this column and to Dr. Gagnon's book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Thank you, Dr. Gagnon.
Thanks for having me.
Friday on Issues Etc., it's This Week in Pop Christianity. We'll talk with Pastor Chris Roseborough about Terry Savelle Foy's claim that the Bible teaches us to use our imagination to create our ideal future. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners notice first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.